Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Kara Hetland in today for Lori Walsh, and it's time now for the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining me now on the phone is Roger Whittle, the managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Kara. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for being here. And Seth Tupper, Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter. Seth, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So let's start with the economy. Bob Mercer had an article recently which raises some interesting questions about what is going to have an impact on South Dakota. And I think the interesting point that I noticed there is that you're going to have to go industry by industry to figure it out. Roger, why don't you go first?
Well, that's what the general point of the meeting was. You know, what affects the farm economy is a little different than what affects the manufacturing economy. But overall, I think it's the farm economy that we're going to probably be focused on the most, because that's our number one industry in South Dakota, and it's not on a good track.
No. No, and what can happen? I mean, are there policies that can happen that can make things a little easier?
Well, that's we would hope so. A lot will be decided when the Congress finishes their farm bill. It could have a big effect on things, or positive or negative, and that's something that we'll have to wait and see on.
And Seth, what about we have the Affordable Care Act uncertainty. We have the tax code rewrite uncertainty. There's a lot of things happening in Congress that just kind of keep people on edge just a little bit.
Yeah, when I read that piece, when I think about, potential causes of a recession, I'm no economist, but when you look at, health insurance premiums and what Congress and the president are doing and not doing to fix our healthcare system and our insurance market and everything else. I mean, I know my premiums are going up a significant amount this year, and so are many, many other people's. And health insurance premiums continue to go up and up and up, and of course that eats into people's disposable income. And when I think about where things are headed, if Congress and the president don't get together on some kind of fix that can stabilize health insurance premiums, that in itself could cut considerably into consumer spending, I think, and could have disastrous effects on the economy as well.
Well, and there's the ripple. I mean, it ripples all the way, down to the businesses on Main Street, but also has a huge impact on state government and the state's budget as well.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, in this state, we depend on sales tax as our main source of revenue to fund the state budget. So, if we get the double whammy of a bad farm economy and farmers not spending as much as they otherwise would, and also health insurance premiums, going crazy and skyrocketing year over year, as they have done, if they continue to do that, that doesn't add up to sound real good for sales tax collections.
And Roger, the federal debt seems to be weighing on people's minds as well, businesses and like.
As it always has, and probably as it should. I know every time one of our Washington representatives or senators are in town, they always point out that a very small percentage of the federal government, and getting smaller, is actual something they have control over. The rest is automatic spending that we have to do. So. The federal deficit is growing, and now they're talking about a big tax cut, which I can see doing nothing other than increasing that federal deficit. Historically, every time we have a tax cut, the deficit goes up, and I see no reason why it's not going to go up again this time. So, things are not looking good.
Well, and Senator Mike Rounds is weighing in on a fix for the Affordable Care Act, actually a short-term fix. Are you seeing an attempt for some bipartisan efforts? Seth, we'll let you go.
Yeah, I do. And, that shouldn't probably surprise us at all with Senator Rounds, as we know, having been a former governor of South Dakota and never having had a reputation as a radical or anything like that. He's a guy who's used to solving problems when he was a legislator and solving problems when he was governor. And it seems he's trying to take that approach to this healthcare issue right now. And the way I kind of think of it is, you know, President Trump has said he's going to cut off these cost-sharing reduction payments to insurers and to try to basically kill Obamacare. And if Obamacare was a house, he's trying to burn it down, you know, without salvaging anything from it, giving anybody any warning, anything. And what Senator Rounds and these other senators, Senator Murray, a Democrat from Washington, and Angus King, an independent from Maine, and Lamar Alexander, a Republican, Tennessee, I believe, and some others who support the legislation are trying to say, hey, let's instead of burning the house down, how about we salvage some things out of it first? How about we make this transition a little bit easier and ultimately reach the same goal? So they're trying to take a common sense approach and extend these payments to insurers for a couple more years to ease the transition off of Obamacare before they can, you know, possibly replace it with some other system. And the interesting thing to me will be, you know, ultimately will Senator Rounds and these other lawmakers, will they be rewarded for that politically, that they tried to do something to make a common sense fix and ease the suffering of people who depend on, Obamacare for their insurance and kind of ease the path to something different? Or will they get punished because they will be viewed as being too moderate, too liberal, perhaps, and not doing enough to kill Obamacare as they promised? So there's a political risk there, I think.
Will the president even sign it?
Well, that's an open question right now, and from what I read, I don't really see anything indicating anything one way or the other right now. But it is at least somewhat encouraging to know there are people who are trying to fix problems rather than just, give talking points and tear down one system before you've built the next one. But we'll see. Like I said, I think a lot of people in Washington are probably afraid to take that kind of problem-solving, common-sense approach because, again, they're afraid that they're going to face a primary in their next election from somebody more radical and more ideological than them, and that they'll be painted as not Republican enough or whatever the case may be.
Roger Whittle, your thoughts?
Well, he raises some good points, but I think eventually the problem should transcend political stands. I was talking to somebody from Watertown today, Republicans, whose insurance premium under the ACA is going up $500 a month. A month. And that's just not sustainable. Something has to be done to get this system under control. And I don't think, as Seth said, burning down the first one without having anything to replace it is the answer. And hopefully voters will understand that on both sides of the aisle and not punish Rounds and the other more moderate Republicans and Democrats for trying to fix this. They should be rewarded.
Do you see the same thing happening with the tax bill that happened with Affordable Care Act, that they don't necessarily have the votes or the plan to fix it?
Who wants to go? I will go. I do see that. You know, it seems like everything we're doing these days winds up this in the same situation. The Republicans have control of the White House, the House, and the Senate, and yet really have not been able to pass. They haven't been able to do anything with health care, and I really don't see any difference now with the new tax code coming in. And it's the same situation. Our tax code desperately needs help, much like the health care system did. But there's so many opinions out there on how to do that. Will it get done? I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, there's a reason it hasn't been touched in 30 years, right? It's so complicated.
Exactly. And we seem to just make it more complicated every year instead of trying to solve the problems.
Well, and Seth, I'll ask you this. Is the president setting deadlines, is that helpful in something that's so complicated?
I don't know. I don't know if much of anything the president does has been helpful lately, but all of this is, you know, kind of goes back to what we started talking about, which is all the uncertainty in the country right now, mm-hmm. and that not being good for financial markets. And, I think if to the extent that he's setting deadlines, it's because he really needs to win on something, despite having a Republican president, a Republican Congress. There hasn't been any landmark legislation that has been adopted or approved yet. There have been some other minor victories. The Supreme Court, getting somebody seated on the Supreme Court, of course, was one. But I think the president's probably just impatient and is kind of really wanting some kind of victory. And, on the Obamacare front, as we discussed, it's understandable he wants to rush toward that, but at the same time, as Roger mentioned, there are millions of Americans who might suffer in the meantime, just so he can get his victory on this. So that's where I think some people appreciate the approach of Senator Rounds and others trying to ease the pain a little bit along the way.
Okay, we'll jump into our rapid fire round quickly. Three topics: Thune in the seat for a self-driving car. Seth.
Yeah, we started a political podcast recently at the Rapid City Journal. He was our guest on episode number 2. We did about a 20-minute interview with him. And one of the things I wanted to ask him about was self-driving cars or automated vehicles or whatever you want to call them. Because as we sort of bounce from day to day and we hear, what Thune tweeted yesterday, what Trump tweeted yesterday and the controversy that day, so much of it ends up, just being so much noise. And meanwhile, there are some pieces of legislation, like the one that the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee is dealing with that would regulate self-driving cars. And Senator Thune is the chairman of that committee. He's had the opportunity to ride in self-driving cars in and around Washington on the interstates. And he thinks that this technology is going to be a part of our everyday lives a lot sooner than we think. And that this is, although we may think it's science fiction and far off, it's really coming and it's approaching fast, and his committee is at work on legislation to make sure that when this technology is deployed, it's safe and ready to go. And that's something that could have a transformative, obviously a very transformative impact on all of our lives. So that was interesting and somewhat refreshing to talk to somebody about some legislation that could actually get through and do something good and bring about some positive change. Senator Thune thinks it'll be a big boon to traffic safety and that it will reduce traffic fatalities and things of that nature, because most of our accidents are from human behavior, distracted driving, drunken driving, things of that nature. So there's a bright spot for you, hopefully.
Okay, and Roger, Dennis Dugard ranked the 9th most popular governor in a new poll released yesterday.
Yes, top 10.
Top 10. 59% approval rating.
Yeah, and that seems a little low mm-hmm. for him, but, he's in his second term. He's not running again, so he's had a little more freedom in his actions the last term. Like, he's signing the teacher pay bill was a big deal, which I'm sure a lot of conservatives in the state didn't like. But, still, top 10 in the state, that's something to brag about. In the nation, I mean.
Right. And that, they surveyed registered voters online between July 1st and September 30th to find out their people's opinion. So, scientific poll, would you say? Yes? No?
Well, today these polls are as scientific as they get, I think.
Okay.
They're very well done, these polls, and they're usually fairly accurate.
All right. And Seth, in the last few minutes that we have together, let's talk a little bit about your Sunday feature on the nuclear missile accident that you uncovered. How'd you get word of this?
Well,
how'd you learn about this?
Yeah. 9 years ago, actually, I was I worked formerly at the newspaper in Mitchell, and I did some freelance work on the side, and I wrote a travel story about the then new Minuteman Missile mm-hmm. National Historic Site, which is east of Wall. And that story is still out there on the internet, and a guy in Texas read it, and long story short, basically sent me an email saying, hey, how come nobody at the missile site, or nobody in general, seems to know anything about this accident in 1964 in which a nuclear warhead was blown off the top of a missile and fell to the bottom of a silo, underground silo near Vail.
And, you said, what?
He said, I should know. I got a medal for it. So I responded that, well, I would really like to know about that. And we did an interview by phone, and he sent me images of his Air Force Commendation Medal citation that he received for that. And I did a FOIA and through some struggling with the FOIA and was able to uncover a 65-page report on the accident itself, and found out that, yes, I mean, as far as I could tell at the time, nobody outside of the military really knew anything about it. It didn't make our paper, and all I could ever find on it was, you know, some mentions on some niche websites here and there, based on some small snippets and government reports. But yeah, that's how the story came to me, and yeah, it was great fun. The guy Bob Hicks, who got the medal, ended up coming up here, and we visited the old silo site together, and we visited the Minuteman Missile National Historic Site, and got that story told after 53 years, finally.
And how was he during the interview? Was he reflective? Was he angry?
You know, what's funny is that I think all of us who outside of the military would probably expect somebody like that, your life to have been changed by something like that, or expect you to be really philosophical about it. But I think, you know, the reason he was chosen to be on the missile maintenance team was because he was very level-headed, very unemotional, very calculating, intelligent, problem-solving type of person. And so, yeah, I mean, he just reflected on it as, you know, basically that was what he was trained to do. He went out to the site that night after the accident and went down and safed the missile is the word he used, which is to basically go down and break the electrical connections between all of the fuel phases. And then he also helped haul the warhead out of the silo with a crane. They put the warhead in a cargo net and lifted it up a few feet of space between the missile and the silo wall very carefully over the course of like 2 hours with the crane, and he helped with that. And to him, it was just a job that needed to be done, and he was very calm about it, and remains so to this day. It didn't sour him at all on the need for nuclear weapons as a deterrent against attacks from other countries. And he just was very proud of his service, and he was proud that there wasn't an accidental detonation of the warhead when it popped off a missile. And just very cool, calm, and collected, just like he was back then, apparently.
I love the part in the story where, you know, a commander, a high-ranking officer, asked, "How are we going to do this?" And he, as a second class
airman at the time, yeah.
Second class airman offered up a solution, and he was told to go sit in the car.
Right,
but they did it his way anyway.
A little bit later, yeah, he was called back and said, "Now, what was your idea again?" Basically. So, that's very reflective of who Bob is. Like I said, when he made the suggestion, as he told the story, they said, "Hey, when we want your opinion, we'll give it to you," kind of. And so he just said, "Okay," and he went away. And then when they called him back, he told them what he thought. And like I said, just a real task-oriented kind of guy, and reflective of, I think, of a lot of people who worked in the missile fields and continue to work in the missile fields in other states where they still have missiles and underground silos.
Could have been a very serious disaster.
Yeah, it could have been. And I think, you know, the real risk, as he told it to me and some others, was when this warhead popped off the missile because of a short circuit and a retro rocket firing. The nuclear warhead itself wasn't at great risk of detonating, but it could have damaged the missile as it was falling to the extent that the missile and all the fuel in the missile would have ignited and blown up. And the two airmen who were down there at the time would have been killed in an explosion. And then, of course, at any time as they were during the response effort, if the missile had been more badly damaged or they had bumped it or anything, you know, it could have exploded. So yeah, it could have been a lot worse than it was. As it was, nobody was hurt, and it was... they got the warhead out, and they pulled the missile out, and things went on, and they learned from it. And I've since, in the reader response, I've heard from several people who worked in the missile fields who said in later years, one guy even told me that they were threatened. Their lives were threatened, and basically to the point that, you know, you don't use a screwdriver down in the silo. That was what caused the accident. The guy used a screwdriver to pull a fuse out in a security system down in the silo. Well, in later years, yeah, that was stressed to the point that your life will be in jeopardy if we catch you using a screwdriver down there.
Yeah. So all right. Well, I want to thank you both for taking time and coming on the program today. If you haven't read Seth's article in Sunday's Rapid City Journal, highly recommend it. Seth Tupper, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Roger Whittle with the Watertown Public Opinion, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Thank you, and I repeat that. If you haven't read Seth's article, do it. It'll tell you what a great reporter can do and how newspapers are still relevant.